The title of my talk today is The Red Hot Rock. And people are going, huh, but this is a reference, a very specific reference. And it comes from something very profound that the Buddha once said to his followers about what he saw as the most toxic, the most negative, and the most destructive state of mind we can ever experience. It's a state of mind that probably causes more problems for more people than any other. And this state of mind we have given the name resentment. That's what I'm going to be talking about. So the Buddha said that resentment is like a burning ember that we pick up and hold, intending to throw it at someone that we think has done us wrong, as they say here in the South, okay, in some way, shape, or form. The problem is, while we're holding it, just waiting for the right time to throw it, it's burning us and making us even more angry, and it's not harming the person we're angry at all, okay? So we can all understand this concept. But if you add to this the fact that some people not only do that, they also have an ember in the other hand, two or three in their pocket and one under their hat, okay? Some people like that. Then we can begin to see what a widespread problem this is. Because not only does carrying resentment around tire us out, it also has the potential for creating real and lasting problems at every level of our life. And when I say every level, I mean the mental, the emotional, the physical, I'll talk about that in a bit, and even the spiritual, especially the spiritual. That's what we're going to talk about. Now, to begin with, one of the reasons that resentment is so harmful to us, besides the fact that it grinds away at every level of our being, is because it comes in such a wide variety of shapes and sizes. Resentment can range from mild irritation or simple annoyance over some little thing that nobody else even notices, okay, to seething rage over some perceived injustice. It can show up as intolerance towards someone who uses their cell phone in a movie theater. That really annoys me. I get very resentful at that, you know. Or it can range from that all the way to deep anger over the current political administration, whichever one that happens to be, okay. The problem is, if we aren't aware of it, that we've got it, it can become so much a part of our everyday thinking, so much a part of how we act in our relationships, how we do our job, and how we feel physically, that it grows roots into every single part of our being. In fact, for some people, it's like a tumor. It really is. It spreads both visible and invisible tentacles into our body, into our heart, and into our mind, affecting almost everything that we do. You see, one of the most damaging characteristics of resentment is that it does not stay compartmentalized. Okay, it's very, very insidious. It spreads. That's why people who are chronically resentful usually don't resent just one person or just one thing. They resent everybody and everything. And it's very easy to see why. I mean, for example, if we don't like broccoli, that dislike doesn't normally spread to other vegetables, right? If we dislike opera, it doesn't spread to other kinds of music. All right, but resentment is very, very different. If we allow our resentment about, let's pick an Atlanta thing, how about traffic? Okay, our resentment about traffic to fester, that means every time we go out of the driveway to go someplace, we just know it's going to be lousy and those people are going to block us and all that other stuff is going on. Or if we allow ourselves to feel irritated by postal employees, every time I go to the post office, whatever it is, or lawyers, or politicians, or the dog barking next door, or whatever it happens to be, we will begin to become angry and irritable all the time. We will. You see it all the time because it's such a powerful and poisonous emotion that it permeates our entire being. It becomes a filter where we see not just one small part of the world through that filter, we start to see the whole world. It's like a filter that's only this big, but we've got it right in front of our eyes. So everywhere we look, that's what we see. Now, anybody who spent time in 12-step program, and a lot of people in 12-step end up coming to a community like this as part of their spirituality, has a pretty good idea of what I'm talking about. Because getting rid of feelings of resentment is an absolutely essential part of recovery for any addiction. Now, the big book, they call it, in Alcoholics Anonymous, for example, it says that the things, this is great, it says that the things we are addicted to are not really the problem. They're a symptom of the problem. They're a symptom of the problem. The problem, more often than not, is the resentment that we build up, sometimes over a period of years, that we allow to take over our thinking. And as a result, we develop an addiction to distract us from the resentment. That's kind of the process where it happens, okay? Of course, before we can get rid of our resentment, we have to first become aware that we are resentful, which sounds funny, but a lot of people don't know it. And we have to become aware that it's doing us more harm than good. We have to know that there is a problem. That's why the first step in a 12-step program is we admitted we were powerless over whatever it was, drugs, alcohol, sex, whatever it is, and our life had become unmanageable. Unmanageable. It took control. But before we can even do that, before we can even admit we have a problem, we have to accept personal responsibility for what is really going on in our life, both out there, where the resentment is focused, but in here. In here, okay? Not just some of it either. Not responsible for just some of the stuff in our life, but for all of it. And that, especially if your life is a mess, is not easy to do. People do not want to accept responsibility for creating a mess of a life because it's human nature to want to blame our problems on another person or place or thing outside of us. The economy, bad luck, our parents, God, the government, you can run through the list. But the place that we have to get to in consciousness, not the physical place, but the place we have to get to in consciousness is the clear and constant realization that while blaming others for our unhappiness may be human nature, it is by no means and never has been our spiritual nature. It just isn't. As spiritual beings in a physical world, we are better than that. We are better than that because enlightened, spiritual-minded individuals, and by that I mean people who know that we have been born with the God-given power to make good decisions and the spiritual strength to carry them out, do not see themselves as victims. And make no mistake, resentment is a victim mentality. It certainly is, a victim state of mind. Now, another danger of living with resentment comes from the simple fact that most of us tend to keep it locked up inside. It's not socially acceptable to explode at people all the time. Now, while we are just sitting there going, I'm all right, you know, our mind may be seething with thoughts of revenge, whatever it happens to be, full of beautiful, satisfying images of what we'd like to see happen to the people who are annoying us, you know, they go, all that stuff. But those thoughts, as delicious as they can be sometimes, are just fantasies that feed our inner anger and frustration, and they make it stronger and stronger and stronger. I once heard someone say, you may have heard it, that resentment is like stabbing yourself trying to make somebody else bleed. I thought that was a really great statement, okay? It's a good analogy. Even if we're furious at someone for something they've done, the nature of resentment keeps it locked inside. So rarely do we do anything about it externally. We just let it bubble and boil and burn and build up pressure inside of us until eventually it affects our work, it affects our sleep, it affects our eating habits, it even affects our ability to give, receive, and even make love. And if it goes on long enough, it will kill us. It will kill us. I kind of imagine what Dr. Seuss would say about this, so I made up a little poem. Would you like to hear it? Sure you would, okay. It will kill us in a car. It will kill us in a bar. It will kill us in a spat. It will kill us lean or fat. It will kill us in a riot. It will kill us nice and quiet. But kill us it will. You can take that to the bank. Now, sometimes we don't... Thank you. Thank you. That's what I'm going to do after I retire. Yeah. Sometimes we don't know how bad things have gotten until we reach the point that all the different things that are making us angry become interchangeable. Interchangeable. You know, that's a point where we have completely given our power away. That is a point where we have become so used to being angry at something, at anything, that our anger and resentment and annoyance and irritation take on a life of their own. They take on a life of their own. They become our default personality. So even if things are going great, we don't notice it. We still feel the need to find something or someone to be annoyed with because we have become addicted to being angry. We have become addicted to being angry. And if we're really angry all the time, we end up getting disproportionately angry at things that are actually very, very minor, very minor. That's why someone who's resentful towards their boss or their job, for example, but they don't dare say anything at work because they don't want to get fired, when they get out into the car, they are so worked up, they start screaming at everybody else on the highway and arguing with them, and then they go home and yell at their kids and kick the dog. And it has nothing to do with any of those things. It's misguided resentment, okay? Any person who lives their life that way has unconsciously, that's important, has unconsciously accepted the belief that the whole world is against them, that everybody in the world dislikes them, and that it's not their fault. Okay, that's the state of mind they're in. That's what they think they see when they look around and when they interact with people. But all they're really seeing through the filter they're looking at, from their angry, resentful, unhappy perspective, all they're seeing is their own reflection looking back at them from the mirror that is their life. That's what they're really seeing. That's what Emerson meant when he said, life is the mirror of king and slave. That's what our life is. It's a reflection of the consciousness we hold. The sad thing is, if they don't realize what's going on in their own mind, they become like an animal who keeps attacking itself in a mirror because he thinks it's an enemy. You sometimes see puppies doing that. And sooner or later, it will happen. They wind up living alone with no one to call. That's how they feel. That's kind of how they feel. And as we all know, that's not the way things have to be. Life is better than that. Life is this incredible experience that we have the choice to make into what we want, okay? But that's the kind of world they create for themselves. And it's never going to change until they start accepting responsibility for the way they are thinking and they begin to do something consciously and deliberately to change it. That's where we come in. We work in the conscious and deliberate realm, okay? Not to change what's going on out there in their life, okay, but to change what's in here, because the outer reflects the inner. We talk about that all the time. Now, as we all know, there are some people in the world, we all know people like this, I'm sure no one in here this applies to, we all know people who never seem to be happy or satisfied. Anybody know somebody like that? I have a brother like that, okay, yeah, a lot of them we're related to, as a matter of fact. Most of us try to avoid people like that, right? We don't even want to deal with them, we just try to avoid them. So as a word of advice, if you've noticed everybody trying to avoid you, maybe there's a message there, okay, a little advertisement there. Maybe there's a clue, okay? Anyway, a man by the name of Frank Colby, I looked him up. He was a writer about 100 years ago. He once said this. I thought it was great. I'd never heard this quote before. He said, I know of no more disagreeable situation than to be left feeling generally angry without anybody in particular to be angry at. Isn't that interesting? I thought so. Even if we only look at the physical effects, being resentful all the time is its own punishment. It's not just an emotion for us to analyze and deal with. It's a very definite physical feeling if we're paying attention to our body. It's a tightness in the chest or the muscles. That's what resentment is. It's a constant shortness of breath. It's gritting our teeth and clenching our fists even when we're asleep. Anybody here do that? Don't raise your hand. I don't want to know, but some of us do, okay? People who are constantly angry have a much higher level of acid in their blood because it's eating away at them. That's not a metaphor. It's the truth. Their blood pressure is higher. All of those things. But the truly amazing thing is a person could have every single one of these unpleasant physical symptoms on a constant, ongoing basis and not even realize it. Because that's the way they've felt for years and years and years. In The Science of Mind, Dr. Ernest Holmes, writes this, and he wrote it back in 1921, not too long after the book that Lee was talking about. He said, a deep-seated resentment against persons or conditions will surely manifest itself in some disagreeable physical reaction. Okay, that's great. Dr. Raymond Charles Barker, my teacher's teacher, wrote this. He was a little more direct. He was the minister in New York for 30 or 40 years, New York City. He said, show me a person with a long-term deep resentment toward their parents, and I will show you a nice ripe stomach tumor ready to happen. Cold, direct. The man was very, very direct. But scientists and researchers are finding out that those words are true. In fact, it has been proven statistically that people who tend to blame other people for their problems experience a much greater incidence of physical illness. Isn't that interesting? People who do not get along with other people tend to die at an earlier age, a significantly earlier age. And people who are constantly angry about a wide variety of things, especially if they keep that anger all locked up inside as resentment, are not only at much greater risk of cancer and heart disease, their recovery rate is worse. It's actually very, very poor. Here's the good part. Unless they make a radical change at the mental, emotional, and spiritual level, because that's where the damage starts. That's where the damage starts. So that's where the healing ultimately has to come from. So that means at the very least, that we need to pay attention to, and we need to become aware of, not only what our thoughts are on a regular basis, but how we carry out the actual process of thinking itself. Because thinking is a process. It's a process. Now, a lot of people don't use it as a process. They let external things control their thinking, but the act of thinking deliberately is a process. How we use the thoughts we have, how we allow the wisdom of spirit, as we say it, in us to be an integral part of the life we live. What are the primary emotions that we express through our thoughts and our beliefs and our comments as we focus our attention on the world around us? That's what we need to be aware of. Are we always worried? Are we always fearful? Not afraid, but fearful. You know, that's kind of a light level of afraid. Are we defensive all the time about our beliefs, about anything in our life? Do we feel powerless? A lot of people feel powerless in the world today. If we are constantly unhappy with how other people are treating us, we place ourselves completely at the mercy of their opinions and behaviors. That's what we do. We'll get angry when they get angry. We'll seek their approval, and then we will resent them when they give it to us. We do that, okay? We'll resent the hell out of their attitudes, their opinions, their behavior, without saying or doing anything about it. And none of those are healthy responses. On the other hand, if we allow ourselves to think and to live and to believe, to allow them to think and live and believe as they choose, and at the same time, if we claim that same privilege for ourselves to live and think and believe as we choose, then we're not going to have anything to be resentful for. Okay? Think about it. If we can change things between us or in the situation and they need to be changed, we need to change them. Okay? If we can't change them, we should just let it go and forget about it. In either case, we have to take responsibility for our own feelings. We may need to accept the way things are, even if they aren't pleasant, at least for a little while, and we should never get too attached to the outcome, to what the final result looks like. That's really important. Now, don't get the wrong idea here, okay? This is not about learning how to become a saint who never, ever gets upset, like me. too many people know me for me to get away with that. Sometimes anger is justifiable, righteous anger. You know, things happen. But we need to learn how to handle it appropriately. We need to learn how to express our anger in a balanced, honest, respectful, and spiritual way. In the 4th century BC, what was that, 2,400 years ago, Aristotle, smart guy, he said this. He said it in Greek. I'm going to give it to you in English, okay? He said, it is easy to fly into a passion. Anybody can do that. But to be angry with the right person to the right extent and at the right time, with the right intention, and in the right way, that is not easy. That is not easy. And it isn't. It's not easy. But it's something we can learn. It's something we can learn. Resentment never does anything good for anyone. Even if we've been mistreated, even if the other person is obviously wrong. Even if the situation we find ourselves in seems to be unjust, unfair, whatever it happens to be. We need to learn how to recognize when this unhealthy, destructive energy is in us, okay, before it causes a problem, and to learn how to change it into something useful. It's energy, and we can't destroy energy, but we can convert it. We can convert it. And the most useful, constructive, and powerful thing we can change our resentment into is, what do you think? Forgiveness. Did somebody say that? Forgiveness. So let me talk about that for these last few minutes. There's been a lot of research recently, and unfortunately a lot of need for this kind of research, aimed at helping people to heal who have experienced serious trauma in their life. Whether it's being caught up in a terrorist attack like 9/11, or being a survivor of or losing a loved one in a school shooting like in Parkland a couple of weeks ago, or experiencing a serious crime or suffering emotional or physical abuse either recently or many years ago as a child, like all the Catholic Church is dealing with. And I know that some of the people in this room, myself included, have experienced those kind of things. And they are not to be taken lightly at all. However, when most of us on a day-to-day basis think about feeling resentful towards others, we usually think about being resentful towards people who don't use their turn signals or people who talk behind us in the movie or whatever it happens to be. As silly as it sounds, those are the kind of things that bother us the most. But if we can find a way to heal people who have experienced far worse things, violence and major disruptions in their life, if we can help those people to move forward without carrying around a lifelong resentment towards the people who did something to them, that same process might help us all achieve a little better perspective in our life. The process is the same. It's just a matter of scale. It's just a matter of scale. Now, one of the most active individuals in this field of research, I went looking around, is a man by the name of Fred Luskin, Dr. Fred Luskin. He's a psychiatrist, I believe, and he works at the Center on Conflict and Negotiation at Stanford. Are you familiar with him, Scott, that group out there? Okay, he does a lot of work with that. This man did a lot of work on the Northern Ireland Hope Project after the troubles in Northern Ireland, all the violence that was going on, teaching forgiveness, very similar to the group that had the hearings in South Africa after apartheid. And Dr. Luskin had a lot of success with a four-stage method of healing that I want to share with you very briefly this morning, because it actually promotes an evolution of thought and feeling that's virtually identical to what we practice here. Virtually identical, because it addresses the conscious use, there's that word again, conscious and deliberate use of this power that we all have, this power that we consider to be a spiritual power to change our thoughts and our emotions as the only way we can heal a negative life experience. So the first stage of this process, four stages, let me run through them fairly quickly and then we'll be done. The first stage of learning how to replace resentment with forgiveness is something we can all relate to, whether it's on a large scale or small scale. The first stage is the stage when something negative happens in our life that affects us personally. This is where we experience a loss or an injury, we feel angry or hurt, we try to justify our negative emotions and carry them with us for a long, long time. We blame the person who did something to us for the feelings that we're having, we see their actions as inappropriate, and we see our response as being completely justified. The term for that is righteous indignation. Everybody familiar with that one? Okay. Our anger may be expressed externally, or it may be internal. It may even be submerged or repressed, which it does for a lot of people, which is usually a lot harder or a lot more difficult to deal with. So stage one is something happens. Something bad happens usually, okay? In the second stage, which sometimes takes a little while to get to, it's a process, after feeling angry or annoyed or upset or hurt, okay, or angry about whatever it is that happened to us, we need to eventually come to the realization that our hurt and anger don't feel good. In fact, it sucks. It really does. It feels bad. We need to recognize that the feelings we have, not the thing that happened, get that, the feelings we have are actually causing us to feel mental, emotional, and even physical pain. Once again, not the thing that happened, but our feelings are causing us this pain. And we may start to get concerned about our health, about our relationships, all of these things. This second stage is very interesting because it's actually the awakening. I like that term, a spiritual term. It's the awakening of our inner awareness, which means that it truly is the beginning of the spiritual part of our healing. So apply this to these kids at Parkland or 9/11 or any of these other things if you don't have an experience in your own life. You see, whatever the reason is that we start thinking this way in stage two, it shows that we are beginning to make conscious and deliberate choices about what we're thinking and how we perceive the things that happen. Maybe we need to try to see things from their point of view. That's pretty healthy. You know, try to see the 9/11 hijackers from their point of view. Hard to do. We may need to take a broader, more spiritual view of the entire situation. Maybe the view from 30,000 feet instead of the view from down in the mud. It looks very, very different. Maybe we need to just decide to let it go, just to drop it. We can do that too. In other words, we stop allowing our thoughts to think us or our emotions to feel us, and we get it back the way it's supposed to be. We take control of what we're thinking and feeling. That's stage two. In the third stage, we try to remember how good it felt the last time we forgave someone. And if you have a hard trouble remembering the last time you forgave something, there's a message in that, right? There's a message in that. But most of us have at least one example in our past of when we allowed our anger to dissolve, to just dissolve, okay? And obviously, the more often we practice this, the more examples we'll have to draw from. So it starts to feed on itself in a positive way. Once again, the little things are just as significant as the big things, if not more so, because we have a lot more of the little things during the course of the day than we do the big things. So that's how you practice. That's how you prepare. And this is the point where Dr. Luskin says, we finally realize that how long we stay resentful is entirely up to us. Entirely up to us. Now, the fourth and final stage, though it may seem to be the most difficult, is the most powerful. This is what he calls the transcendent stage. I love that word, transcending. This is the stage where forgiveness becomes what we are instead of what we do. What we are instead. It becomes our default mode in every single situation that we encounter. We start to perceive our connection, our oneness with other people, and we start to see their actions not as something that they did to annoy or injure us, but simply as a mistake in judgment that they made. Okay, where we have the power to choose how to respond. Or as someone once said, where did I read this? I can't remember. It was, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. It's a very powerful, powerful statement. It works for the little things, but it works for the big things too. This is the point. After those four stages, instead of constantly feeling like a victim of external events, we actually empower ourselves by choosing what we think and feel in every situation in our life, large or small, all the time. This is where we transcend our human weaknesses. That's why it's called the transcendent stage. Now, the good news is this is not something unnatural that we have to learn. It's the most natural thing in the world. This idea of compassion and forgiveness are part of our spiritual nature. We were born with it. We were born with it. We just got it numbed out of us by watching the news and all this other stuff. It doesn't mean we're never going to get upset again. There are a lot of annoying people in the world, okay? We'll just stop carrying around that upset, carrying around all that unnecessary anger and letting it affect our health and our relationships and our ability to be happy. Feelings like happiness and empathy, and forgiveness, and gratitude. They may not be the normal default mode for most people, but every spiritual teacher who ever lived, no matter what their religion, okay, has told us that these things are the essence of what we are. That these things, compassion, forgiveness, gratitude, are part of God showing up in the world as us, in, as, and through us, moving from the inner to the outer, moving, as we say, from spirit, invisible, to form out into the external world. So forgiveness and compassion exist, whole, complete, and perfect within the deepest part of us, ready to appear and to start healing things as soon as we allow them to, as soon as we open up to them. And when we begin to practice these things on a regular basis, and we see the immediate, and I mean immediate positive results that they produce, that they have in our life, it becomes very obvious that these teachers were right, as they so often are. And as we learn this, as we learn, we become teachers by our example. We become teachers by our example, which is a good thing because I think we would all agree this world needs all the good examples it can get, especially now. So this is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. So it is. Thank you. Thank you. All right, let's take a moment. I know this is a subject that can bring up some pain for some people. Wherever you are in consciousness, be here now. Be here in this place, in this time, your body, your mind, your spirit, recognizing the truth of our being, that the world is an amazing place, the variety of things, the number of people, the interactions, and within all of the incredible number of things that happen every single day, some of them are painful. Some of them are things that happen that we can't understand or can't explain. And sometimes they happen where we are. But we recognize that as spiritual beings, nothing outside of us has power over us. Our life as spiritual beings expresses power from the inside out. And the power that is inside is not our power, it is the power. It's the same power in every single one of us. So in every experience that we encounter, where there is pain and suffering, we allow ourselves to be there, if not in person, at least in consciousness, seeing God wherever it appears. And the first responders and the doctors, seeing God in the presence of love and kindness and all of these things that never go away. All of these things that are a power for good, constantly expressing good no matter what. That's what we focus on. We realize that no one can harm us without our consent. Nobody can take our power to create away without our consent. No one can create lasting pain in our life without our consent. So from this moment on, we do not give that consent. We recognize how powerful we are, not out of strength, but out of love, which is the strongest thing there is. We begin to be a beacon in the world, a beacon of light, the light shining from within. As the teacher Jesus said, we do not cover it with a basket or a blanket or anything else. That light is the light of our understanding. We take the wisdom that our teachers have shown us. We apply it in every situation in our life. Whatever we see, we know something better. So this is the power we have, and we will never give it away. Knowing this, I'm grateful for this awareness. I'm grateful for every person in my life from whom I can learn, whether they're good examples or bad. I'm grateful for recognizing the power that is in me and every other person is the same power. And I'm grateful for this life that I have been given. This gift of life I have been given, but what I do with it is my gift back. So knowing this, I accept this awareness. I accept the best of these ideas today. I set the others aside, and I release this awareness into consciousness, knowing that it is doing its good and perfect work in my life and in the world every moment, beginning now. Please join me in saying, and so it is.